Sean Springs scheduled to join us here. When we get connected with him, we will get him on, get his thoughts here through three games on the team, on what's wrong with the defense, on Jaden Daniels, and a lot more. Denton, if you haven't connected with him yet, I did want to play that Aaron Rodgers piece from yesterday on the Pat McAfee show. Aaron Rodgers clearly had watched Monday Night Football, had thoughts on Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin. Here's what he said.
I had a good conversation with Alex Van Pelt, who's the coordinator, about Drake, and they're all excited about him in the future. Selfishly, I'd love for him to be able to sit. I love Jacoby. I've known Jacoby forever. I think he's a really good quarterback. And, it wasn't a great performance for their offense the other night, but our defense is pretty damn stout. But young quarterbacks, the rarity is the kid last night, unbelievable performance. I mean, Daniels played incredibly well. We got to see him in training camp, again, joint practice with him. And I was impressed by the way he threw the ball. I actually did watch a decent amount of film on him because we were looking at both their stud receivers. The kid in who played last night for Jacksonville, I believe, Thomas.
Right, yeah.
And then obviously Neighbors. We thought there'd be a chance to pick either of those two guys. So in the process of watching those guys, you got to see Daniels play, and he was very impressive. What I loved about him is that he played from the pocket on time. And when you can do that, you can stick around the league for a long time, because he also has that extra skill set that we saw last night, that he can run. I mean, he can really, really run. And he is fast and athletic and elusive. But the key to sticking around the league is playing from the pocket. And I think that's, again, to highlight another guy I played last night, my good buddy Josh, who's playing at MVP level. And I told him, I told him every year he comes to my flag football event, he's going to win MVP in this league. I mean, he's that talented. He's an incredible player.
So, by the way, I'm sure you picked up on it, but he was initially talking about Drake May, who did play the other night at the end of the game on Thursday Night Football when the Patriots were getting blown out against Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. But you heard what he said, that what was impressive to him is playing from the pocket, because ultimately you have to be able to do that. There is, a way that a dual threat quarterback like a Lamar Jackson can front run their way to a title. I do believe that. It hasn't happened yet because the best example of this era of football of a true dual threat and a monster dual threat in Lamar Jackson, he hasn't been able to do it in the postseason when he's been asked to, from behind, play primarily from the pocket as a thrower. But I can envision Baltimore as a one seed again, maybe not this year, maybe it's next year, and they get a matchup in the first round, in the divisional round, like they did last year. They took the lead early, they jumped out, and they, never were threatened by Houston. And you never know. Like in the Kansas City situation, unfortunately, they got behind, but it can happen. You can front run your way to a title. You can be dominant and never trail, and you're running through them as a running quarterback, as a true dual threat, but not necessarily from a behind, have to throw it from the pocket on third and 10 to move the chains. So I don't think that, I think quarterbacks who can throw from the pocket, I've heard Aaron Rodgers say it, I've heard others say it. You take a guy like Kirk, who is not an extend the play kind of a guy most of the time. He extends in the pocket sometimes, like Brady did, like Manning did. I'm not comparing him to them. But you'll hear them talk about, running's great, but ultimately to win or to really give your team the best chance to win, you're going to have to make throws, reading defenses from the pocket on third down and, six, third down and eight. I understand that, but I don't buy it completely, because I could definitely see a year in which Baltimore never has to come from behind in the postseason. It hasn't happened yet, but it could happen. By the way, that's right now the game of the week, right? The Sunday night game. Baltimore and Buffalo. In Baltimore, by the way. Is there a better game than that one this weekend? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think that's the big one.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers also took a moment to compliment Terry McLaurin. Here's what he said.
Why Daniels played so good last night. It wasn't like everything was off schedule. You know,
touchdown to Terry last one. I mean,
That was awesome. And he knew there was pressure and he knew how to get it up, and he had a beautiful stop and go on the outside. You know, they're in a zero coverage here. He knows there's one extra guy. He knows where he's going with the ball. He throws an absolute dime. It's really hard. You got a guy barreling down. You got to put enough air on Terry on that ball so he can stutter go. And then you got to expect where he's going to be when he transitions out of this. I mean, he's throwing the ball as Terry is stuttering. It's an incredible play. You got to give credit not just to Jaden, but Cliff Kingsbury, I thought, called a great game. Dan Quinn, you know, anybody who's been around Dan loves him. He's created a really good culture there. And then, you know, the stuff that I heard from Terry, when they're talking about Terry on the field, because he came in, I believe he had 8 catches for 39 yards. They read us in the first 2 games. Terry McLaurin's had 1,000 yards, but I saw on the thing last night, like 10 different quarterbacks have thrown the ball before Jaden. But his humility in that moment, that's what you need from your star players. You need your best players to be your best people. And I give Terry a lot of credit. Obviously, him to have a couple big plays was awesome last night. I think he had 4 for 100 or something like that, which is, you know, great for him. But I have a ton of respect for Terry, and even more after just kind of hearing the commentary last night about how he's kind of gone about it and knows it's going to, you know, I'm going to get it in time. I know I'm going to get mine. But just the patience that we don't see a lot in this league from star players if it's not starting out right. And I would say to those star players, too, it's a long season. It's 17 weeks. You know, you never know when you get hot, get on a roll, hit a stretch of games where you place a certain type of defense and you get more one-on-ones and you get opportunities. I was really impressed by the quarterback play from the two winning quarterbacks last night.
That is such a great compliment. And Aaron Rodgers isn't the first to give that compliment. But it coming from Aaron Rodgers, he understands what that position is, wide receiver in particular. And, you know, when he says you have to have that kind of humility, your best players also have to be your best people. What a compliment that is. I mean, if you are a friend or a family member or a father or mother of a Terry McLaurin type and you hear that, that is high praise. You know, at the end of the day, these careers are short and they're going to live a lot of life afterwards. And I think we've seen that from our vantage point here since he came into the league in 2019. He has humility. He has self-awareness. He is one of the team's better players, and he is one of the team's best people. And you could have had a wide receiver in those first 2 games catching, you know, what was it, 8 balls for 39 yards and really being disgruntled. Not Terry. You know, we've had so many conversations about Terry, and I feel like we've exhausted all of them. We'll probably have more of them, I'm sure, down the road and certainly in the offseason. And certainly if Washington's in contention at the trade deadline, and somebody like Davante Adams or Deontay Johnson becomes available, I'm waiting for that conversation. But no one, even in our discussions of Terry, I think he's a good receiver, really good receiver. I personally don't think he's among the elite receivers like many of our fans do, or maybe they don't as much anymore, but did. But man, has he been a first-rate human being since showing up. And at that position, given what he's been through, I mean, the 10 quarterbacks, Case Keenum, Dwayne Haskins, Colt McCoy, Alex Smith, Kyle Allen, Taylor Heineke, Garrett Gilbert, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Carson Wentz, Sam Howell, Jacoby Brissett. I mean, you're talking, that's 11 quarterbacks. He's on his 12th. I think I got that list right. They put the graphic up the other night. And that's what, you know, a guy like Aaron Rodgers is watching the game. He's like, holy smokes, I had no idea. He's had that. Who's played with that many quarterbacks, you know, since coming into the league? It's crazy. I'm sure I'm missing some, too. That was the list I just put together. Anyway, do we have Sean Springs?
We do.
Do you want to take a break and come back and get him on the other side? Or do you
No,
want to
we can take him
straight
now.
From here. All right, good. Sean Springs joins us, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. One of the best corners ever from this area and in the NFL and for us and for Seattle and for New England and others. And the pride of one Springbrook High in Silver Spring. Sean Springs is with us. So I was thinking about you the other day, in part because of the coverage stuff through the first three games, and wanted to get your perspective on that. So we'll circle back to that in a bit. But just your impression, you know, you grew up here, even though your father played for the Cowboys and the whole thing, and you know how
You love throwing out there that my dad was a cowboy, man. You just love throwing that out there. You know.
Well, he broke my heart a few times. I mean, you know, he's back there with Danny White and Tony Dorsett. There was some Tony Hill. Who was your, other than your father, who was your favorite cowboy growing up?
Oh, man, they all like my uncles. Like Ed, Too Tall Jones, Drew. Probably, I spent the most time with probably Everson Walls and Tony Dorsett.
Yeah,
I would say those two. They were my Dennis Thurman is another one of my dad's probably best friends. Harvey Martin, Bruce Thornton, Randy White. I grew up with Randy White. I remember when Bill Bates came into the facility for the first time. If you guys remember the name Bill Bates,
sure.
I remember Dallas had like a racquetball court with a basketball, and Bill was in there just shooting jump shots, and it was like 110 degrees in there. And I'm a little kid, like just sitting in there. He's like sends me to get water for him and stuff. But man, those are the old days. I'm excited about the new Commanders, though.
So tell me, really your excited. First impressions of Jaden Daniels.
Well, oftentimes we see kids who perform very well in college, and we wonder if it's going to translate over to the NFL. I'm very impressed with him as a human. Everything I've seen, being over the facility, first in the building, and people say, well, this guy's the first in the building, last out. No, he really is. He's the nicest kid. He's smart, hard worker, franchise quarterback. You know, superstar in the league, franchise quarterback. That's my first impressions.
You surprised that three games in? I mean, the game he had the other night is epic. It's one of the most memorable quarterback games, and we haven't had a lot of them around here in a long time. But are you surprised that he's done what he's done already?
No, I'm not surprised. I we are starting to see quarterbacks coming in the league now. I'm pretty prepared. And if you think about Coach Kingsbury's system, Cliff's system, very much like a college system, running the RPO game, run pass option, 1-2 read. If it's not there, take off. So the game plan is tailor-made for him to have success, much like you saw C.J. Stroud down in Houston. I figured, you know, that system was for him, and obviously CJ had an amazing year. I think you're seeing the same thing with Jaden, a kid that the system is built for him, understands his strengths, his weaknesses, you know, what he can do. And I've been very impressed with Coach Quinn and his staff and how they've just been bringing him along in a narrative around, hey, you don't have to put the team on your back. Do what you can do, and we'll give you more each week that you can handle. And guess what? We're all in it together, and it's not about just you having to do everything, even though he had a Herculean effort the other night. But the narrative around him is just like, just be the best version of yourself, and I love that.
What's the most important thing beyond just being able to do it, being able to play the position? When you're a rookie quarterback in the organization, I know you were there for Jason Campbell, so that's one rookie quarterback that you were around. I don't know if you were around one in Seattle, but what's important beyond just proving that you can play?
I think the coaching staff and the way they prepare and how they talk to you. Going into Cincinnati, I don't think, you know, one would have said he would outperform Joe Burrow. But it seems to be the narrative around him is, you know, hey, man, we you are a guy, and we heard him say that before, but Dan and the staff has done a wonderful job. You just the way they handled him, you know, is like, hey, man, like, they're very honest about his abilities. They encourage him. So I think it's the staff and the team around you, from the quarterback coach to the offense coordinator, starting with the head coach and ownership.
Dan Quinn has said, we're talking to Sean Springs. Dan Quinn has said that he has the confidence that inspires everybody mm-hmm. around him, but he's got the humility, which, you know, makes him also likable. Like, it's kind of that, it's a hard thing to do for a young person, right? To be super confident, exude that confidence so everybody around you believes in you without being full of yourself or having all the answers. And he said, you know, from early on, that's so important in a young player at that position. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, my thought is, one, the confidence comes from him understanding and truly understanding his ability to be able to run and throw. And he's a coach's kid, so he's been around, you know, understand the importance of leadership in a quarterback role, and, you know, so he gets it. And just being humble, I think nowadays, you know, guys who come into the league realize that very quickly that we've seen a lot of first-round quarterbacks come into the league, not have success. Think about Bryce Young down in Carolina. You know, Caleb Williams was struggling a little bit in Chicago. So I'm quite sure he's watched football and realized that, hey, man, it's like, it could be me who, you know, one day who's up and the next day I'm down. But right. I think that, you know, the humility across the league at the quarterback position is people have respect for the game.
You know, there's another saying that you got to have a quarterback, and when you have one, the rest of the team knows that when you step on the team bus to head to the stadium, you got a guy that you can win with. As a player, do you think that way? I mean, look, you were on the Patriots with Brady for that one year. But is there that mindset among the other players that we got a guy here, so we're good?
Yeah, 100%. The feeling of having a guy, you brought it up, the year I was in New England, riding a bus with Tom, getting off the bus, just in practice, you knew. Tom gave you a chance every game. You know, you knew that he was going to, regardless if you gave up points, if the offense was down, they were struggling in the first half, at some point he was going to make a play. And when you know that, you fight. You fight hard. Not that you don't fight hard all the time, but sometimes it can be discouraging. You go out there, and, you know, I played here in Washington, and we had a year where our defense was very, very strong in 04.
Yeah.
But our offense was, right. I don't want to, like, disrespect it, but it was pretty bad. And it was just, it was painful, right? But when you know as a defense, and you know as a team, and you know as a fans that, man, this guy can come out of nowhere and score a few points. The game is never out of reach. The fans stay in it. The team is always energized and ready to go and support and fight. So, yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, just you mentioning that team, like, I would imagine you've been on some of those teams where it's like, we're really good. We're getting stops. We're forcing punts. And we're right back out there three plays later. That's got to be that's tough on a defense, especially in today's day and age, right? Because defenses holding up over 60 minutes if they're out there a lot, it's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, it gets exhausting and it gets frustrating, and it can cause tension between the team at the time. You know, you kind of find yourself saying that, you know, the offense versus defense. There's a clear separation between the offense and defense. And that's when you're not a really good team. But so you try not to let that happen. But so you got to be careful. You're fighting hard and the other group is not holding up their end. But in this case, man, the team looks great. Both sides of the ball are playing really, really hard. You can see the energy. You can see the energy on both sides of the ball, the special teams and the players that they bought in. They all love each other. They're all fighting for each other. It looks pretty good and kind of refreshing to see.
You know, as I was saying that to you, and you were talking about that, I was thinking just about Greg Williams. But the game, like last Monday night was a memorable Monday night game, but one of the all-time great Monday night games in terms of memories for fans and I'm sure players, basically just fit the description of what you were talking about, right? That game in Dallas in 2005, it's 13-0 for basically, you know, up until 3 minutes left in the game. You guys are, you know, forcing punt after punt, stopping them all game, and there's nothing on the board until the very end.
Man,
part of that night.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing about that is Santana was just so frustrated all night, and we would say, Tana, go say something to the coach. And it was Clint Portis who told Coach Gibbs, like, throw Tana the ball. And we were playing hard. It was hot that night, and, you know, Dallas had a pretty good team, and we were holding them. And when Tana scored the first touchdown, it was like, okay, you know, it's on now. We're down seven. We went right back out, stopped him again, and Santana came right back with another bomb on Aaron Glenn and those guys. So, man, that was you're right. You know, that same thing we saw Monday night, just the team just – how about that catch? How about the throw and catch to Terry? And I heard you talking about all the different quarterbacks. Man, that was so Terry was so fired up after having that catch, and it was an excellent catch, great coverage, but better throw and catch. And just seeing Terry and the team fired up on the sideline, that was really, really good to see.
Yeah, it really was. All right, let's talk about what hasn't been great for the first three games. We're talking to Sean Springs. So why has the what's troubling the defense more than anything else right now?
Well, you know, the defense, when I think about the Tampa game, there were a couple of times that the guys up front were all over Baker, and I think Baker made some great catches. I mean, great escapes and great throws and escapes, and Mike Evans made a pretty good catch, and, you know, the coverage was decent. Coming back the week later, playing Daniel Jones, who was down there, just got beat by Minnesota, and so we're thinking like, all right, we can stop the Giants, you know, although they got a superstar rookie, Malik Nabers. I think the kid is awesome. Yeah. We did it. That's what St. Juice did. You know, he was targeted 18 times in that game, and I think he only gave up 10 catches, and that's a lot. But I thought the defense played better. And then now facing Cincinnati, you know, coming to that game, you know, the secondary challenge for week one and week three, there's not too many better receivers that you're going to see in the league than, you know, probably 6'5", Mike Evans, and then Ja'Marr Chase. So part of it is I think we face some pretty solid offenses. You know, the Giants offense is not good. But
Nabers
Tampa
is.
But Nabers is. And so part of it is, you know, the defense, and you got to remember, whole new linebacking staff, Luvu and those guys, led by Luvu, and those guys are just, they're all new. The secondary is new. Starting a rookie, my central at corner. St. Juice is, you know, he's fighting hard, but he's not a number one corner. Jeremy Chin and those guys look good, but you got to remember, it's a whole new group of people playing together. Bobby is keeping them unified because Bobby's a leader in the middle, but and Jonathan and Jay and Payne and the guys up front are really good, but it just takes a little time for them to gel and communicate. I suspect with Coach Witt and the way he approached the game, I think those guys will just get better as the season go on. Obviously, there's some weaknesses that, you know, we have to shore up, and it may be at the back end, or maybe we just need more pressure. But I feel like they'll figure it out.
Who are you impressed with in terms of their cover guys? Anybody?
I'm impressed with you know who's been impressing me? That Jeremy Chin is good. You know what I mean? I like the guys. I like Quan Martin. I like Mike Sinistrol. I mean, I hate to say it, he's a Michigan guy, but man, I love that kid. I think if he's 2 inches taller, he's a top 10 pick, maybe even a top 5 pick. I thought he was pound for pound one of the best
football players coming out in the draft. I think I believe St. Juice plays really, really hard. He's close at times. He has to play the ball better. Forbes is out, but he'll be back hopefully this year. But it's one of those things, man, where you ever see the team like you that's really, really close and they play really, really hard, and a couple breaks here and there could have been different outcomes and how we view them. I think that I just believe that they're going to get better, they're going to get smarter, and they're going to start to communicate and talk about it, because a good defense needs to be all on the same page, and they got to learn how to play together, and I think that's what we're seeing. Real solid defense, but we'll get better.
Yeah, because, look, I mean, you went through the when we had a good defense, but offensively we weren't very good. Right now, through three games, offensively they are pretty dynamic and they look really good, and the defense can't get off the field. I mean, we talk about the offense hasn't punted in 2 weeks. Cincinnati didn't punt the other night, and the Giants gashed them left and right. I always feel like, and you tell me if I'm wrong, I always feel like after all these years of watching the NFL, it starts with you've got to stop the run. Because if you don't stop the run, it just makes everything else so much easier. Even Daniel Jones got healthy, you know, when they couldn't stop Singletary. Do most of the coaches you've played for, do they go in saying, first thing we got to do is stop the run, or is that overrated?
Well, no, that used to be the case. And I think it's changed a lot in the league, because the new run is, you know, quick throws. Bubbles. The game is horizontal. It's just as much as it is vertical now. You saw Dayami catching a few quick screens and just exploding up. That's like a run now. So stopping the run has changed in the sense of the run is a short pass, right? So it's about winning on first down. But when you talk about the defense, you have to be able to have some stops, some tackles for a loss, some disruption plays, get backfield, you know, put pressure on a quarterback. So that's where the emphasis needs to be more on, are we being disruptive? Are we getting in the backfield? Are we getting some penetration? Are we getting gashed? You don't like to see us get gashed, and I think that's what you're talking about. Yeah, let's not get gashed here and there. You can't get to give up too many of those, because the NFL offenses are hard to stop nowadays, but we can't consistently get gashed is what I think you're referring to. Not as much as stop the run, because the run now, first down teams are passing. You look at Kansas City and everybody else. It's more about, hey, we can't begin gashed, and we got to be able to get some negative plays when needed.
Who are you excited about around the league? Like right now, who's the best corner in the league? Is it Sauce?
Oh, no. I like Sauce a lot, but Surtain is a guy for me. He's good. I think Travion still, you know, when he's healthy, he's a really good corner, because I think now the name of the game is you got to be able to get the ball. You can be in coverage, but you got to be able to get the ball. So I love Travion. I'm excited about the team. There's a few teams that surprisingly good I'm excited about. I got to start with Seattle. I mean, I didn't see that coming. You know, man, they look violent on defense, and Tino is playing well. And although that's my old team, I didn't see that coming.
Right.
Minnesota Vikings and Sam Darnold. Come on, man. Like, I'm so happy for that kid, because you think about a quarterback who's bounced around from the Jets to the Panthers, and now look like he's found a home, even though they drafted a first-round quarterback. Man, Minnesota is scary with Sam Darnold and Jefferson. Look like the best 1-2 punch in the NFL with a receiver quarterback combination. Those guys look good. The Saints look great. Dallas is a disappointment. You know, I didn't see that coming, but I didn't see that coming. And Cincinnati, I didn't see that coming. I thought I knew there was a little disruption with Ja'Marr Chase holding out, but I had no idea they would be 0-3. I would have never said that in a million years. I would have predicted those guys winning their conference, the AFC North. But Justin Fields. Oh, I give a shout out to my guy and the staff at Pittsburgh, because obviously Russell Wilson was supposed to be the starter, but man, is he playing lights out! So, I think there's some teams in the league that are playing really good. The Saints. You know, so, but if I had to say what I'm most shocked about is the Minnesota Vikings and Sam Darnold. Whoa, they put a spanking on
it. It's just, you know, we did this with Geno Smith a couple of years ago. You just can't give up on these guys. Sometimes it's all about the fit, the scheme, and the supporting cast, which he has in Minnesota. Last one, they go to Arizona Sunday.
Yep.
Kyler Murray, they're facing. What's the challenge of facing a guy that can extend a play as long as Kyler Murray can?
The fact that he's throwing to Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, listen.
Well, you were going to point out another Buckeye here already. He looks like the real deal. But when you got a quarterback that can literally scramble around and move around for 6, 7, 8 seconds before he unloads it, how do you cover for that long? What do you do?
Well, the guys up front got to work.
Yeah.
You know, he is, you know, Kyler's a real deal. He's not big in stature, but he had a big heart and he can scramble and he can make some things happen. You got to keep the ball in front of you. You got to be careful with man coverage because oftentimes when the guys like that scrambling around, then it becomes a duck, duck, goose, you know, and you're chasing receivers around and you're out in Arizona and even though it's indoors, it's still warm out there. Keep the ball in front of them. There's times where you may have to put somebody in the secondary, take a linebacker off the field, and put somebody in the secondary who can kind of spy them, much like people would do with Michael Vick back in the day. I mean, that, you know, not so much Lamar, but because Lamar and those guys, he's actually a runner, so he's part of the run game. But Kyler Murray is exceptional when it comes to extending the play and making something happen with his feet and then throwing it. And the guy he's throwing to is dangerous, right? You just cannot let Marvin Harrison get behind you. He's 6'4". He's special. You know, that guy's top three receivers in the league, you know, after this season.
Already. It's
not even a question. Yeah,
I mean, it's amazing how many great receivers there are in the league right now. It's never been a receiver league like it is right now.
Well, they're all from Ohio State.
Yeah, they are. Or LSU. LSU's done pretty well, too.
Yeah, LSU and Ohio State, just draft a receiver from them two schools and you're all right.
Good luck with your Buckeyes this year. Thanks.
Well, you know what our Buckeyes going to do, man. We can talk about that on another show.
Well, I mean, they should be able to beat Michigan this year. Right. Here's the closing question about for Michigan. You. If I told you you have to choose one or the other, beat Michigan or make the playoff, which is 12 teams. If you beat Michigan, you're probably going to be in the playoff. But if we were in the old days where beat Michigan or make the playoff, which is more important to you?
You still think it's small. It's about winning the national championship.
Okay. Good answer.
It's about winning the national championship. Beating Michigan on the way to the national championship. We know we're going to make the playoffs. You know, that we spent $20 million on a roster. Of course we're going to make the playoffs. It's about winning.
If you don't make the postseason, Ryan Day is gone. At Oregon in a few weeks. That should be fun.
It should be a tough place to play, but Oregon better. The Pac-12 still got to up there recruiting. Big boy football has come out there looking for Travion Henderson and Junkins. We're going to see if you like football when we go out there.
Good luck. I hope you're well.
All right,
brother. I'm glad you called. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
All right, Sean Springs, everybody. We'll do some Denton news when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app, and our show today is presented by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on an iPhone 16 Pro. From Daniel. Daniel sent me this note. Mr. San Juan Hill, Teddy Roosevelt. The quote you used is exactly the quote that Dan Quinn gave. The better quote is, hold on, nothing is either good or bad, but by comparison, you should have used that one. Thank you, Daniel, very much. I think I understand that. I understand the San Juan Hill reference, Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders. But the Thief of Joy quote from that Dan Quinn used to say, we don't want Jaden compared to anybody else. And he said, you know, the Theodore Roosevelt comparison is the thief of joy. I think what you're saying is the quote that I used, which is compare what you want, what you have, and you'll be unhappy, is identical to the quote he used. I get it. That makes sense to me, right? Because it's all about comparing ourselves to others or making comparisons of people to others. It's you know, it's not very productive. You're kind of left with the feeling of either inferiority, right, or superiority, I guess. I get what you're saying. Thank you, Daniel, for being my English / literature / quips and quotes guy. That was interesting. My point earlier was, even though I used that quote, which was, I guess, exactly like the quote that Dan Quinn referenced, is that fans are always going to use comparisons. It's really a self-interest situation. You don't want to use that quote about yourself. You don't want to compare yourselves to others. It's like, compare again. Yeah, we're good here. I figured it out. Thank you, Daniel, for that. I had to read his note a couple of times, but I get it now. All right, let's get to some Denton news.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
Oh, man. Look at Dan Quinn. He's just introducing so much stuff for us to talk about. By the way, you know, the one thing before we get to your news about that Dan Quinn quote, and he said in that quote, I'm going to read it here. He said that he doesn't want, where's the ghost line? I don't want any comparison or any of that stuff. I think it was Teddy Roosevelt who said, comparison is the thief of joy. And I agree with Jaden on that. I don't want to compare him to anybody else. He's still growing. Hold on, where's the ghost part? Oh, here it is. I'm sorry. And I definitely understand our fan base has been waiting for the franchise quarterback, but I also don't want Jaden feeling any ghosts. I mean, who are the ghosts that he'd be feeling? We haven't had a quarterback here forever. There's nobody other than RG3 stylistically to compare him to. Do you think that was in the back of the coach's mind?
No, I think he was comparing to the bad ghosts.
Okay.
Like, not necessarily comparing him, but not wanting him to get caught up in the fact that there's been so many bad quarterbacks here forever that it adds another
Maybe
layer of pressure
right.
to him.
Fair enough. All right, news.
All right, here's the biggest story of the day that at least you and I are concerned with. Unfortunately, Nats lose to Kansas City. Their season is coming to a close at the end of the week. They lose 1-0, no offense. The story that's been really just trouncing my social media feed and probably yours too is this UNLV quarterback situation with Matthew Sluka. The UNLV right now is 3-0. They're ranked number 23 in the country. And through the first 4 weeks of the season, they're looking like a really good candidate out of the group of five to make the college football playoff, which made it even the more surprising when Matthew Sluka posted late last night, early this morning, that he was stepping away from the program. He's going to go into his redshirt year. Reminder, if you play more than 4 games, you can't redshirt a year. So he's only played 3. He's going to effectively trigger a redshirt year, and he is leaving the program. And he said in a social media post that there are promises that the UNLV program made to him that they have not followed through on. He didn't elaborate, but we have gotten more elaboration since then, which I'll give you in just a second, but I want your initial thoughts on a guy stepping away from his team that's 3-0.
Yeah, first of all, I had UNLV, I think, week one against Houston, I'm pretty sure I had them in that game. They trounced Houston, and then the next week Houston came back and nearly knocked off Oklahoma. That's beside the point. When I first read this morning, I'm like, UNLV's actually a contender right now for the non-Power 4 or the non-Power 5, whatever we're calling it now, automatic into the playoff. Like, they're a legit contender for that. And this guy has been a big part of them getting off to a 3-0 start. They beat Kansas on the road a week ago Friday night in a big, big win for them. And he rushed for over 100 yards in that game. That was the night there was another game on that we were both watching that night.
But, Kansas State, Arizona.
K-State, Arizona. And we were both watching that one as well. And my first reaction was, you can't quit on your team. You can't do this to the other people in that locker room. But I don't know the specifics. Like, is he getting slow rolled in terms of a payment? Have they promised to make payments already that he hasn't received? I mean, sometimes your only chance of getting paid is to withhold services. So I do understand part of that as well, but it's like, oh my God, this guy was a transfer from Holy Cross, played 4 years at Holy Cross, gets this opportunity and some NIL money to go to UNLV, hardly a football power. And all of a sudden, it's like UNLV, they're 3-0. They got a shot to potentially be the team standing at the end. I think they've got a game with Boise later in the season, which would be maybe massive. The game. That could be the game for a playoff spot. What have you learned since? Like, what was he supposed to get paid? What has he been paid? Was it him saying, you know, I've been pretty important to this 3-0 start. I want more. Like, what was it?
So I had received a tweet in another group chat that I'm in earlier this morning that said it was from a lesser known college football reporter. I want to like knock this guy down or anything, but he said that the agent had gone to UNLV after the first three games of the season and said, hey, we want more money. But then Adam Rittenberg at ESPN, who I trust very, very much, and he's been on our show before. We really like him. He's been all over this story, and effectively what seems to have happened is that UNLV promised Sluka $100,000 to transfer from Holy Cross to UNLV, but they did so with a verbal agreement, nothing in writing, which is a big, big red flag, especially in 2024 when you can legally put things in writing as it relates to NIL because there's no rules. The agent has been constantly asking UNLV, like, hey, we need money. You promised us money. We need money. They're not covering relocation for Sluka. Apparently, they weren't covering cost of living or anything like that. I don't know if he's a scholarship athlete, if they provided him a scholarship or anything along those lines.
Oh, come on. He's got a scholarship. He's the starting quarterback.
I would hope so. But sometimes with some of these transfers, there's like certain windows and things get kind of weird and loopy. So what ended up being the breaking point was that there was a phone call on September 19th that included Marcus Cromartie, who was the agent, UNLV coach Barry Odom, and another UNLV support staff member. And according to Bob Sluka, who is Matt's dad, Cromartie was told that UNLV would not be paying anything other than a $3,000 relocation cost, which has essentially set this entire thing into motion. Adam Rittenberg also said he was told to wait until classes started before he was going to receive any sort of payment of the $100,000 that were promised. I still think
classes have started.
Exactly. And he has received none of that $100,000.
Yeah. I mean, look, there. I don't know if he thinks that he had an agreement, verbal or otherwise, to get $100,000. Certainly at this point, I feel like we've heard a similar story somewhere else that we've talked about over the last year, somebody not getting paid.
This is not the first or last time this will happen, but in years prior, you couldn't really do anything about it because a lot of this stuff was supposed to be under the table. But now that it's not under the table and there's no rules, like the thing that is so, you know, tough to wrestle with about this is you're not really like, you can't report this to anybody. Like, nobody is going to come lay the law down, so to speak. You're just kind of giving your pieces to why you're leaving. Like, no one's going to punish UNLV.
You have to have this in writing so that you can go after them legally.
Right, which they can't do.
He could do that if it was in writing.
If it was, but because it's not. So, like, no one's getting punished for this necessarily. It just, he is leaving the program, and now people know that UNLV might be kind of weird when it comes to giving their word about money.
Yeah, so let's just assume and take it on face value that he and his agent have described it as it is. Because the truth is somewhere usually in between. You know, their side, his side, it's somewhere, in between there. But if he's telling the truth, two things are going to hurt. Here. One, he's going to be hurt by not playing. He's also going to be hurt by the perception that he quit on his team. He's 6'3", I'm looking it up, in 215. He's had some good years at the lower level. Now he's off to a good start at UNLV. And, you know, this could be penny wise, pound foolish, because he may have a career in professional football that he is really booting right now for $100K. Secondly, and you just nailed it, if UNLV is really not paying him what they committed to paying him, they're not going to get anybody to transfer there in the future. I mean, why would you transfer there if they stiffed the quarterback who got him off to a 3-0 start? This is UNLV football. We're not talking about, you know, Tark days or UNLV hoops, which ruled that town forever. We're talking about football, and, you know, both are going to lose because of this, even though I kind of understand from the player and the family standpoint, wait a minute, you guys got me to come all the way out to Vegas to play football for you because you promised me $100,000. Stupid of them not to get something in writing. And I don't know how sought after he was as a transfer portal guy. You maybe you do. But yeah, bad situation. And God, at the same time, everybody loses, including his teammates, who are on a 3-0 team and have a chance to be in the playoff at the end of the year if they continue to win. God, it's $100K. Seriously, find somebody that'll write them the check.
Especially in Vegas. That's one, like, just have someone go
find
have a good
somebody
night.
Somebody in that collective that, you know, I mean, you're not paying for something at this point that might happen. You're paying for 3-0 and a guy that's played really well and leading you to 3-0. Seriously? It's crazy. What else you got?
How about Mike Tomlin not naming Justin Fields the starting quarterback for the rest of the season? He was asked about it this week, and he said that Russell Wilson isn't healthy. And as long as Russell Wilson isn't healthy, that's not necessarily a decision that he has to make. That worries me a tad.
He doesn't need to do this. Mike Tomlin knows what he's doing. I trust the way he's handling this situation. He's continuing to, in many ways, to say, you got to continue to earn it and prove it. It's only three games. Just keep doing what you're doing, and eventually I'll get to naming you the starter. But I don't have to do that right now. And by the way, you know, Russell Wilson at some point will be healthy enough to play, and he should keep the next opponent guessing. If he names Fields the starter right now, there will be no guessing when Russell Wilson is healthy enough to play. Justin Fields has done a nice job here. He's got a good supporting cast. He's got one hell of a head coach, that's for sure. They're not scoring much. You know, it's not like they're moving the ball up and down the field, but he's not hurting them. What does he have? How many turnovers does he have on the season? He's got one pick. I see that. Does he have any fumbles?
Not that I know, but I don't watch the Steelers that often.
But this is a Pittsburgh situation where they are a little bit more capable offensively than they've been, you know, at least a little bit more with Fields, certainly as a scrambler. And they've got a lights out defense. Lights out. I mean, this team is going to be interesting to watch because I think they've got a chance to grow into something offensively that they've been nowhere near the last few years when they've still won more games than they've lost. Who do they have this week again?
Pittsburgh has... Who do they have this week?
They have the Colts.
They got the
on the
Colts.
Road. They come here on November 10th. That's always a takeover game with Pittsburgh fans. Maybe it'll be different by the time we get to that November 10th. I know you've got some more news, so maybe we'll hit it a little bit later on in the hour. Let's get to our weekly NFL buy and sell next. Kevin Sheehan, show the Team 980, theteam980.com, free and live on the Odyssey app.